Hey, welcome guys. Welcome everybody. This is Fine Wine to Me, the wine business podcast. My name is Chaba. This is episode 11 and we're talking about inclusivity in wine. And today I asked Emma to join me, who is an accessibility consultant and also works in wine at the same time. We're going to discuss this topic, which is, I believe, it's very important and it's not talked enough, at least not in wine circles. That's how I feel anyway. And yeah, let's talk about this just after the intro. Well, hello, Emma.
Hi.
Welcome. Thank you for accepting my invitation to this podcast.
Thank you for bringing me on and giving me this opportunity to have a chat with you.
Yes, let's talk about inclusivity in wine. But before we go into that question, obviously people probably want to know, what is accessibility consultant?
Yeah,
What is it all about? What do you do?
Yeah, what do I do? So I had a career before wine. I actually, in my school days, which were a long time ago, got the opportunity as work experience to go and work in a local special needs school. And I very quickly fell in love with the idea of, they had a unit for their sort of post-16 children. And it was about teaching life skills. It was about, how are you actually going to access the world around you outside of this special school that's been adapted for you to learn in, and was about making that environment correct for them in that school. And it became very clear to me that it was something I really was passionate about, was how you make the world accessible to someone who maybe have more additional needs than most people, or they may not access information or the world in the same way. So I ended up then working in special needs teaching and in special needs schools for 15 years. That led to me seeing a gap within accessibility. Quite often when people were leaving education, they had no support. So I ended up working for people in their home, setting up care teams, working out how, as they were coming into adulthood, they were accessing places, going to restaurants, all of those things, getting into London, and working with care teams around people who needed 24-hour care to access. So it really opened my eyes to how much the world wasn't really accessible, or things were missing. Yep. Whilst my children were young, it became a very big job. And I've always had an interest in wine and decided I needed to just take a step back from it as a full-time career, and fell into a wine ambassador job, delivering wine tastings locally to me. And I was incredibly fortunate to fall into a brand that supported me then to grow this massive experience in the wine industry over 4 years. So I did trade on and off, cellar door, hospitality, traveled to South Africa, did harvest out there, harvest here, and again fell into this almost big career that I wasn't expecting, which is very fortunate. But it came quite apparent that there were bits missing about accessibility. And as you said, within the wine industry, there were some big gaps. And so for me, I thought, how can I combine the two? And that's where I've turned that on itself and become an accessibility consultant focusing on the wine industry, because they're strengths I feel I have to offer.
Yeah. I mean, you just killed two of my questions immediately, but that's okay. No, this is good. This is good conversation anyway. I like these sort of things anyway. So that makes the whole podcast a little bit more fun as well. Yeah. And yeah, we discussed, you know, how you started in special needs school and how you sort of started off in wine. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk a little bit more about the brand?
Who I worked for.
Own back then?
So and I still do ambassador work for them, because it's really important, because they gave me such a good base of understanding and supported my education in wine. So it was really important to me not to lose that content. So that's Benguela Cove in South Africa. Yep. So Benguela Cove is Hermanus and Walker Bay, but they actually have a home here in the UK. They own Lennersley Gardens and Manning's Heath Estate, and their English wines, they planted vineyards on those two sites in 2016, and their first harvest was 2020, and their first launch of their English wines will be in June this year. I'm involved in the background in a few bits with them because they were a huge part of my journey. Penny Streeter, if you've not heard of her, incredible lady with a lot of to offer. And she was really advocating, and I know we'll touch on this in inclusion, but she's huge for supporting those, especially women, to help further their careers, to help expose them. So she was instrumental for me being able to access the wine industry. So I absolutely still support them. I'm a huge fan of their wine as well.
That's good. That's good. Well, looking forward to taste the non-English English wine. But
exactly.
It's an English wine. But.
Yeah. I know. It's a funny old story when people say, how did a South African wine brand end up in the heart of Sussex? And now they've got this English wine brand about to launch. So,
but how did they end up in?
So Penny actually, so she's actually from Zimbabwe, but she grew up here with her children. So she's got four children. Penny actually has an OBE in her services to nursing, and she set up a recruitment, and that's where her background was. And she moved to South Africa to set up the same profile she had here over there and ended up living on this vineyard, Benguela Cove. The gentleman said to her, I'd like to sell. Are you interested? And she said, oh, go on then. Penny had no idea what she was actually buying. And it was, I mean, Benguela Cove is 500 acres, 250 acres of vines. It makes over 250,000 bottles of wine a year. You know, it's sort of 500,000, I should probably say, actually. And so she then employed the services of Johan Fari, who is the winemaker, he was the winemaker for KWV. And he came over to Benguela and has turned it around, and they're award-winning wines. And so what Penny then did is thought, how can I get these wines into the UK? They need a home here so that they can be sung about here. And so she bought Manning's Heath Estate, which is a golf course. And for the golfers, upset the golfers and dug up half a golf course and planted vines there. But for anybody who loves wine, it was a great, great idea. And her son, Adam, runs Lennersley and Manning's Heath here with Barry Anderson, who... Barry is a viticulture expert from South Africa, has 30 years behind him, and he's over here now bringing that experience to here. So it's just this huge entanglement of people with passion and love from South Africa and here, bringing them together.
Probably a little bit less passion in golf.
definitely not that the golfers, they're still very important, but the wine is definitely the driving force for that journey.
And what is, let's move on a little bit, because what is inclusivity? What inclusivity means? Obviously, people talk about inclusivity quite a lot nowadays, and it comes up in various conversations, obviously, race, gender, sexual orientation, loads of different things. What would it mean in wine terms? Obviously, it's not exactly in wine terms, but what does it mean?
I think that's it. I mean, inclusion in itself is the equal rights to all, and that's equal in making the playing field equal. You know, if you have a set of stairs into a front door, then if you're in a wheelchair, you can't access that. If you put a ramp in, everyone can access it. Anyone can walk up a ramp, and then it's successful for a wheelchair. That's inclusion. It's looking at that, and how is it equal to everyone? How does that make it fair for everyone to access it? And that, for me, within the wine industry, especially in the UK, is such a young industry. It's a chance to teach right those base roots, what inclusion is and how you can be accessible. Be that language, attitude are your first two big things. So for me, I could really see, and it's very British to not ask questions. People tend to, when they don't know something or don't feel comfortable talking about something, they don't tend to ask lots of questions. And that's something I really strive for people to ask me, how can you be more accessible, ask me what you can do, small changes, and you can suddenly make a huge change to a lot of people's lives. So one of the big things I'm calling on is, quite often, especially in hospitality, when you now book tables, people ring up and they say, have you got any allergies or dietary needs? They're finding out that I'm asking for the hospitality industry to start asking, have you got any access needs? Because quite often, you know, I went for afternoon tea last week at the Shard, And I turned up and the barriers they had to get through to get up to the lift were so thin. If I'd been in a wheelchair, I couldn't have got through them. And I said to them, you need to space them out more because you're already inaccessible. And I would have turned up in a wheelchair and not been able to get to you to tell you I actually can't get through. Yeah. So if we can ask the person, have you got any access needs before they arrive, we actually already start on an inclusion note because we've already included them in that conversation. They shouldn't have to tell us what they need. We should be held accountable to include them in that conversation, to open that door for them, to let us know they may need something. If I'm a wheelchair user and I don't need the chair at the table, if you've got any access needs and that chair's already gone when I arrive, I feel included because that space is there for me. Yeah. I don't need the chair. I arrive, I say, I don't need that chair. You're pulling it out the way. You suddenly feel like you're an inconvenience or something's not quite set up for you. That can be the world of difference between someone coming back to a place and not. And I think for the wine industry, as being such a young industry at the moment in the UK, it's this time now to ask those questions for them to build it already in so we don't have to try and fix it later.
Yes, it makes complete sense. And at the same time, when you're not dealing with this sort of issues, problems in your life on a daily basis, obviously it's very easy to forget.
Yeah.
And just before, you know, I sat down in front of the laptop to record this, I was thinking, am I the right person who actually can ask questions about this? Because I'm lucky enough, I suppose, that I don't have, you know, I don't have accessibility needs. Mm-hmm. I don't have, you know, food allergies. So I'm so lucky. Mm-hmm. And these are the moments when you realize that, you know, for some people, it's not so easy. And I think for me, that idea of me asking a question is, as you say, it's a very British thing. I'm not British, yeah. But it's still difficult, you know.
Because there's a part of us that's brought up not to question. You know, don't, you know, it sounds awful, but you used to say, don't stare or don't look. And it's like, actually, do ask. Children ask all the time, what's going on? Why are they in a chair? Why can't they do this? Or how can they do that? And I think we need to learn from that generation, younger, that we stop asking, we need to ask. And like you said there, actually it's a really good example. If you don't know any answers, how can you support them? Because actually, like you said, so many of us don't have to deal with those issues day in, day out. So we take for granted what we can access. So by encouraging that question of what can I do to help? Do you have any access needs? What can I do to help? You still may not then be able to answer and say, oh yes, we can accommodate that. Because of course there's going to be places you can't do everything and no one can do anything overnight as well. But then that helps us learn what we may be able to do in the future. Yeah. So if someone comes to me and says, oh, do you have a Braille menu? The chances are no, because it's a very niche market. But actually, if I can put together an audio, which is really popular, an audio menu, and just have someone recorded, suddenly, again, it's more accessible. You know, there's just things that suddenly you think, well, what could I do that might be accessible? I can't necessarily answer. I can do it this time, but I might be able to do it next time. And that's where my accessibility consultant comes, is coming into, in particular, hospitality settings, having worked in them myself, and saying, what can I help you change or make more accessible?
Do you often call them out, or do you always call them out?
I have been in places where I've gone, you can't do that, or this is a great thing. But I'm really trying as well, because one of the things I push for is attitude, like they're asking the questions, the can-do attitude. Is I just try and go in with a positive attitude of, what could you have done, or what can I do to support you to make this better? Because I don't want someone else to have to go through this. So I don't want anyone else to see this. I definitely do feel that I will question people, but I want to question them in a way that helps them learn, not question in a way it criticizes, because you know, that doesn't help anyone, asking the wrong or giving the wrong impression to someone.
Yeah. And also they're probably going to chuck you out immediately.
Hopefully not.
But anyway, yeah. But on a more serious note, in terms of the wine industry, obviously we talked about disabilities here, but there are other parts as well, other group of people
100%.
Should be included. And when I talk about inclusivity in wine, I think I want to mention that as well, that obviously, as I mentioned in the beginning, race, gender, all the usual things what people talk about in outside of the wine industry or in a more general term.
Yeah.
I think in the wine industry as well, I believe it's a problem. And I think there are some very good initiatives nowadays which they try to tackle certain things. One of them is women in wine sort of collaborations and certain groups. And you are an ambassador or a mentor, I think.
Another
initiative. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
So that's set up by A.D. Smith, who himself is neurodiverse. His mission was to support people to access education and chances to write and work within the wine industry who are from different backgrounds, so ethnic minorities, like you said, sexual orientation, the probably less represented groups, so that they can access those skill sets, but also people who will mentor them on what their experiences are, bring their expertise. So actually I met with one of my mentees yesterday and had an hour chat with him, and interestingly, like, his upbringing is Muslim, so his parents don't believe in alcohol, so how can he learn about it and feel inclusion within his family unit as well was a really interesting point we discussed yesterday. So like you said, that's a really good initiative, and there's lots, and inclusion is a massive umbrella, because you're talking again about how do you make everyone feel equal on all levels. That's the point, is like you said, women, sex, neurodiversity, disabled as in physically, and all of those bits and pieces. My concern is it's such a big brolly now, different groups can get lost and different groups can be involved. I think there's been a big push for sort of the sexuality and thinking about non-gender toilets and things like this, but sometimes actually other groups get lost behind. And I think it's again that everyone needs to be equal, so we need to be talking about everyone at the same time there. Yes, my specialty is accessibility for those with access needs, because that's what I've specialized in, but in that, you know, how many disabled toilets have you seen that ever have, and I like to call them accessible toilets, not disabled toilets, because they're accessible, but are male or female? They're not. The wheelchair sign hasn't got one with a dress on and one with a pair of shorts on. It's just a wheelchair with a person. So again, I go, well, accessible toilets are already gender neutral. So, you know, there's those things that cross over, that we don't need to separate them off all the time.
Sound like very minor things.
Yeah.
In a general context. But when you talk about them, it just makes complete sense, because, you know, how is that not a natural way of doing things? It's such a strange way. That's why I was a little bit worried about this conversation, if I'm honest, because I'm, you know, to say not the right words or use a wrong term or, you know, these sort of things, which I never even think about. And if I can tell you something, it's very funny, because again, I was thinking about what can I add to inclusivity in a talk like this, apart from, you know, asking very basic questions. What connections do I have to all these things? And I was thinking about it for like almost for days, really. I'm not joking. It's like, because I'm so lucky in many ways that I have no disabilities. I don't even have a food allergy. I mean, I don't know what's wrong with me in many ways, but anyway.
It's all the alcohol's killed all of it off. You're fine.
maybe. But when I thought about it, and then just one moment, I thought, like, well, actually language, because English is not my first language, but maybe because I spent 15 years in the UK, and I often joke that my English is a lot better than most English people's English.
You're backwater in a proper format, which actually we're not taught.
Yes, but it's you know, is that is that feeling. For me, I never felt it was a barrier, but I can see that might be a barrier for some people to join.
100%. I mean, language is another one, because, you know, I had a little boy and he was one of the ones that taught me so many lessons. He was autistic. He was 5 when I first knew him and used to babysit for him. He's now 25. I do get scared when I mention the ages of children I've started with. I remember sitting with him and he had a sandwich in front of him and I said, "Have you finished?" And he's going, "No." And I'm going, "Okay, fine." So I left him and I went off and did my jobs and I came back and I went, "Have you finished?" He went, "No." I was like, "Okay, do you want any more?" "Oh, no, I don't want any more. Can I go then?" And the difference in my language and the words I used changed his whole perspective of how he received that sentence. So like you said, be it language, how we structure a sentence, be it a language, which is your first language, it's again, comes under that inclusion of what we can do to make a more positive environment for someone.
I'm not campaigning for, you know, Hungarian to be, you know, accepted in the wine industry in the UK, but I think it's time for people to learn. Anyway, again, jokes aside, in a great scale of things, what do you think the UK wine industry or the wine industry in general? How is it when it comes to inclusivity?
I think it wants to open doors, and I think there's this feeling that they want to, but they just don't know how to. And I think it's showing that it's okay to ask questions and to use people that probably already in teams have additional needs, have their own experiences. Like you said, there's an element for you that you don't feel you have anything, but actually you do. You've just said it, like English isn't your first language. So suddenly you have a strength in the fact that Hungarian is your first language. So if you're in a setup where Hungarian is needed, you become the strength. So if you've got someone who is a wheelchair user, if you've got someone who has ADHD, autism, a visual impairment, a hearing impairment, bring them to the forefront and use their experiences to enable you to let the wine industry do more. We often, people will shy away with their disability because they see it sometimes as an inconvenience to who they may work for or a place they're visiting. But actually, if we encourage it to come forward, that's a huge strength that they've got to offer, because it's something, like you said there, no one else has. And I think that to me is, within the wine industry, I've met people, I've spoken to people who have sat the WSET courses and struggled because they've got ADHD or dyslexia. Actually, if they were to let people know, that can become a strength for them to support someone else going through it. So that's that side of it. And I think that's a really big push for the wine industry, is actually there are people in it they can be using to their strength. And then secondly, is a bit like we just said earlier, is getting people to ask questions. It's okay. As you said there, a lot of people, even when they talk to me, are worried about saying the wrong thing. And I would say nearly 95% of the people I've worked with would rather be asked the question in the wrong way to help educate someone than not be asked at all and have no education. Because if no one's asking questions, even if it's in the wrong format, they're not going to learn what the right format is to support someone. So that, to me, is encouraging the wine industry to ask those questions on how they can be more accessible. How can we help? What can we do? Or is this wrong? Or where is your need so that we can support them?
Who should be asking these questions? I mean, in terms of, you know, as a government body or as a governing body? Or is there any special place where you can actually, I don't know, where you can actually, you know, go with these?
So I've actually spoken to someone, they rung me and I've had a telephone conversation with someone within Scottish Accessibility, the council for the Scottish government, who wanted some input for what they were doing up there within, she works within the wine industry herself, and she reached out. So there are bodies within that, and for the UK, I'd like to see wine, you reach out and do some work with them. I'd love to visit and talk at London Wine Fair to be given those platforms. And I think, like you said, it needs to come from organised bodies like in this, I'm just thinking here because that's where I am.
Yeah.
Start small and hopefully get it out there further. But you've got WineGB, you've got a WSET school. And those are your two first you could get in, and then London Wine Fair, just to talk and help spread that message of what we're trying to achieve. There are, like you said, there are brilliant voices, the likes of Queena Wong, who she also does Curious Vines, her newsletter. And she is superb at being an advocate and supporter for giving voice for this.
Yeah.
But I hope that more and more people will help me sing this message out, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's good to hear that somebody's actually asking you already. I mean, in terms of, you know, when you mentioned the Scottish wine, what was the title?
She works for Equalities and Access in the Scottish Government, but she does like her social communication for wine as well. So she's got a keen head for wine. So she wanted to talk how that works within the wine industry and hospitality, so she could bring those bits to her job. So that's what we were discussing. Yeah,
it's great that they actually already asking.
Yeah,
do they listen when that's my, because obviously it's good starting point when they ask questions. Do they listen? Do they actually implement things or try to implement things? Because I understand it's probably, you know, a very difficult things what we're talking about sometimes not, but on a governmental level or a governing body level, it's probably quite difficult task to implement. But do they listen?
I do feel there's a difference between listening and action. I feel I can be heard, and I feel that I get a lot of lovely, really supportive feedback that your message is really good and you're raising lots of points. And that's great. I'm really pleased that awareness is raising. And that for me is at the moment, that foremost for me is to get that awareness out there to help raise the questions. Actually, in terms of change, it takes time. I know that nothing happens overnight. And especially if you're making bigger movements of change. And that's why, for me, those starting points of just trying to get people to ask questions, that doesn't cost any money. That's just us having conversations.
Yeah.
I know that things that need investment will take more time. And I think for me, I'd like to almost revisit this in 6 months and see who's still putting things into place and who else is talking to me at that point. Because also, that's it. I think it's hard for me at the moment to measure what people are listening to, rather actually, like you said, what they're actioning. I almost want to send in secret shoppers, send in people I know with additional needs into places that have spoken to me and see how they've been different.
Yes. I'm asking this question as well, partly because let's go a little bit smaller than a government
body
or anything. I've seen, I don't know if it was an Instagram message or on your LinkedIn, I can't remember, but I saw a post about the tasting where we met a couple of weeks ago, probably, I can't remember.
Yeah.
And you mentioned something about their accessibility issues there, which, again, when I was walking to that place, I walked down, and obviously, again, for me, it meant nothing. I just walked, jumped across like three or four stairs, which, looking back, that was a real issue. Did they listen? I specifically not mentioning the name of the exhibitors
Interesting, I haven't had anything back, but I'm hoping that coming forward, when they've read something like that, they might say, have you visited this venue? Have you got any thoughts? Or, you know, so that they can learn from it. Because like you said, the piece of information I picked up that actually the disability entrance was at the top of the road.
Yeah.
And you only read that when you got to the bottom and you couldn't actually get to the door to read the note anyway. If that had gone out, if that was me, you know, if there was a wheelchair user coming to that venue, in particular, just thinking of wheelchair, but that could be any, you can still get someone who's unsteady on their feet, who's going to struggle with those steps, or someone with a visual impairment. If that information was, and to be fair to me, I haven't looked deep dived into their website either.
Yeah.
See if it's there. if that was readily available, that inclusion is higher, as you said. But now I haven't had any direct feedback. I'm hoping subliminally they've taken it on and it's made a change for the future.
Whose responsibility is it in that case? Is that the venue or is that the event organizer?
The venue should have it there. But I would encourage anyone booking a venue to ask those questions. And if they're booking it and inviting people to use the space, to make that known. You know, the venue I worked in, most of the functions are upstairs and the lift was temperamental. So if you were booking a function and suddenly you turn up and, you know, you can't get up to it, how is that inclusive? It's not. And I used to encourage them, if the lift wasn't working, ring the main person who's booked it and just say, just to let you know, the lift's not working. Because if someone's coming with you who needs it, it's not available at the moment, let us know. I'm not saying we can magic it to work, but at least you're prepared when you turn up. It's not a surprise. So yeah, that's that line again, that communication can make a huge difference to someone's day of how they feel.
Yeah, I think in terms of communication as well, it's a good point, because although you're doing a great job, and obviously I'm not going to pick on you in that sense.
Do. I don't mind.
But maybe you should have started your post with that, because it was at the end of the post. I honestly don't remember whether it was Instagram or LinkedIn. I can't remember.
It was on Instagram, yeah.
And it's even worse than in this case, because Instagram is a very visual platform, and then you see the images. And then a lot of times people don't really read, because they just, press it twice, you get a little like, and they went on. If somebody takes the effort to read it, obviously they can realize it at the end. But maybe you should start with these ones in the future. I don't know. I'm just...
No, definitely. No, it's been raised with me that a couple of friends through the Instagram world have said, you know, they think I should film like when I arrive at a venue and I can't get to the door, and how that might feel if I was a wheelchair user. And it's definitely something I'm gonna bring in. I think for me at the moment as well, I'm treading a fine line for me, I guess, as well, of keeping an active audience so I can spread a message.
Yes, of course. Yeah.
And I think there's that fine line for me of not upsetting too many people too quickly, that I don't actually get a clear message of what that inclusion could look like. But I do agree of actually bringing it to the forefront is important too, so that it's the first thing you're talking about, not the afterthought at the bottom. And that's the important message long term.
No, I don't get me wrong. It wasn't a criticism. It was
I think it is important. I think it is a really key thing. But it's that fine line between keeping an audience to keep it going.
I believe most of your audience still goes to your Instagram profile mainly for wine.
Yes.
Am I right? I mean, that's probably the number one
factor. Yeah, the wine and the sign language, that has been incredibly popular. I get a lot of messages about that, not only for those for understanding it for hospitality and those who are teaching their children. I'm not sure you should be teaching them all the signs for wine, but that's great if that's how you're accessing it, and you're then introducing a next generation into that inclusion message, so that's great. So that's a big thing, is the sign language. But again, I don't want to get lost in just one part of accessibility when it's a bigger picture of how inclusion works. And it's lovely that it's been visual. As you said, Instagram's hugely visual, so sign language really works on it. And I know I need to do more on LinkedIn. That is a key thing that I'm rubbish at.
I think from my from my digital marketing background, I would encourage you to go on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn is, I think you probably can reach a lot of very valuable contacts there as well, and the message is probably very well received on LinkedIn as well as on Instagram. But again, that's just a sort of a side note.
No, you're not the only one saying it. My husband, he's very active on LinkedIn, because he's head of HR for a big company, so that's his big dig. And he always says, you should be putting this on here as well. And I go, I know, I will do it. So I do need to, because ultimately for me, like I said, foremost, it is just raising awareness at the moment to support that message, and then get that accessibility in place. And if people are using it for good and change, then I want to support it. That's key for me. As you said, I don't have a physical disability that disables me from being able to access anything. My big thing is I'm allergic to furry animals. So when people say they're dog friendly, I'm like, great, I'm not going. You know, and like people go, it's great when they're dog friendly. I'm going, is it? Great. I just, you know. But yeah, to me, that message of how we can be more accessible needs to be louder and louder, and all the platforms I should be using to spread that.
And how can the wine industry be, you know, actually a bit more inclusive? Because that's my last question. Obviously, you know, we mainly covered it, but
No, it is, like you said, I think that comes back to that question. It comes back to, I call on the hospitality and wine industry to be asking, have you got any access needs? Have you got them? So that it can enable people to access it, full stop. Yeah. You don't, you know, vineyards are a beautiful place. They're really accessible. So why aren't we getting more people in them? Rows of vines normally downhill, you know, they're just accessible. There's this beautiful picture, and off the top of my head I can't remember the name. He's a huge advocate for, he actually, his disability came later in life, so he had that experience of accessing the world on his feet and now is in a wheelchair. And he's a sommelier, and he loves harvest. So you can just wheel himself down the vines and pick the grapes, you know, and there's so much we can. So I think just asking those questions. And there's so many opportunities to enable people to be involved, that if you ask, do you have any access needs, then suddenly these people are going to come in the door.
If I'm honest, when I saw AD's initiative, and for a while I was like, where is Emma? it was almost on a daily basis. Some influencer come up and, you know, I'm a mentor now. And I was like, I do hope they're going to ask you to be a mentor, because obviously it was very suitable for you. And I understand that initiative is not necessarily or not just about physical disabilities or these sort of things. But yeah, I was very pleased when I saw your little video pop up on that.
Thank you. I think that's the other thing, is it was interesting when we were talking about this, the mentorship. I was talking about someone when we first sort of banding about and being asked to be part of it and how that was going to work. And it was really interesting talking to this guy yesterday, but actually getting into schools, because the wine industry is wine, you obviously don't really teach it very much at school, because obviously they can't drink wine, but actually the viviculture and business side of it is key. And that inclusion in the door of actually hitting a wider market, I'm talking actually in our, because I'm based in a school some of the time during the week as my as a learning coach, I'm talking to some of the children at the moment, because actually it's a great career to get into, but we don't talk about it till they're older. So actually you miss out maybe a section of children with different diverse needs who would access it. That's a whole other area I keep thinking that needs more tapping into as well.
I think you're going to be very busy in the near future if things go like this.
Oh, my husband says I'm rubbish at it. I can't sit still.
on that note, really, what do you want to do? What's the future for you? Because that's that's the other question. Obviously, you are in wine, you still work in school, but you must have a goal where you want to go and want to do stuff. Obviously, something to do with this, I believe.
Yeah, exactly that. So it's definitely something, when I, this time last year, said to myself, I need to combine these two. I can see these gaps and I want to help. Bring the wine industry into that inclusivity space and make sure that we're accessible to all. And as you said, I'm in the school by day, because at the moment, unfortunately for me, there's not a pay for me to pull from that, because I'm building that awareness and building that support. I think long term, I'd love to be, I mean, someone suggested to me that it almost needs to be like a Emma sticker, like the Michelin star or your food hygiene that you have in the window, that there's an Emma sticker that says we're accessible, or we've done inclusion training awareness so that our whole team is aware of what needs you may have coming in the door, and we're going to ask you those questions. And I think that's a really lovely thing. And I'm actually meeting with a wine distributor who deal with quite a few bits and pieces, and I'm doing some training for their in-house team. And that's it, is that awareness of inclusion and what that looks like, so that they can become more accessible to those wanting to work in it or those guests who come to you. I think that's it. So I think long term, being able to offer that level of training would be really lovely, and how that looks is a growing platform.
Yeah, so I assume you would need some sort of sponsorship or some sort of some sort of funding to actually make this big and make it, you know, viable for not just for yourself but for businesses as well at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's obviously, as we know, the hospitality industry certainly not, but the wine industry isn't either. The place where money just flows constantly. No, exactly. So I think it's another element of what you have to consider.
I think from that point of view, if I can offer training on a really lovely little level that allows everyone to understand it better, imagine then the clientele you're missing. I mean, a quarter of the population has a recognized disability.
Yeah.
So if you become more accessible, imagine how many more people could come through your door as a wine industry or as a hospitality industry to access it. So the little bit of an investment in some training for your team could make a huge impact for who actually is accessing and bringing in your revenue. That's just a side of that thought process.
It's true. And then if you consider, if you just take the language part, which I'm suffering from, but, you know, it's like hospitality industry, at least before Brexit, it was completely, probably 90% foreigners. That might be an issue as well. But enough of my language barriers here, because that really isn't a barrier. But
that's your experience of the world that gives you an understanding of how that may feel for you. Therefore, you can break that down to someone else's barrier. And that's, like you said, if you feel more included from a language point of view, that's your inclusion tick. Yeah. So it's breaking down those barriers.
What is the, I don't like to use this word, but soft skills people need to understand this topic in general? I can only think of empathy.
Yeah.
As a major.
Yeah. No, there is empathy. And I think the ability just to listen and not see it as criticism.
Yeah.
So like you said there, if someone wants to give you feedback, take it from a positivity that they want to help you grow. Don't look at it as a criticism that they're saying you don't do this.
Yeah.
Actually, you could do this is a really different way of looking at it. So how you listen and take that positivity from what someone's got to offer is a really important thing.
We all need to develop all these soft skills a little bit more. But I certainly think there is hope.
Yes.
I hope there is hope.
Well, I think I've got 20 plus years now within the disability sector and working in it and supporting it. And as much as it hasn't changed as quickly as one would like who's worked in it, it's made big strides. And how we deal with mental health is making huge strides at the moment. So it is a changing scenery. And like you said, so it is coming. They do make changes and people are more willing to listen. So I hope that continues.
Maybe we need more of you. What do you think? I mean, it's just because, you know, I like to think that we are, especially the wine industry, I like to think that we are open-minded people. I'd like to think that we are, you know, we have empathy towards each other, but maybe we need the message. We need to hear the message more often and from more people.
Definitely. And I think conversations like I've been fortunate with you this evening to have is exactly that. People talking about it is where it needs to start. Like you said, the wine industry coming up is really important. I think there is a slightly older, maybe generational wine industry that has had those barriers in the past on accessibility on all levels, be it gender, race or sex as well. But like you said, it is open to learn. And that's that key thing, is if we can keep those doors open and those conversations happening, change will happen. It does, because it becomes natural and it becomes part of life. If we stop the conversations, then we fall back into old habits. And I think that's that important message to keep going with.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant, Emma. Thank you very much. I think it was it's a very nice ending sentence there to what you just delivered on this topic. Because I think it's an important topic. And I do think that in the wine industry, we don't talk about it enough.
No.
And even very small things, what you just put down in that Instagram post. And when I thought about it, you know, I didn't think about it when I was walking to that door. And when I read that message, I was like, God, I mean, I don't have to deal with a wheelchair on those tiny roads, staircase, whatever. But if they turn me around and say the entrance is from the other side, walk back there, I would be pissed off myself.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's just the millennial in me.
Because, yes, okay. You know, and at that point as well, on that particular day, the weather was nice.
Yes,
imagine if you're in the rain, the snow, the ice, and you've got that far as well. Yeah, there's lots of bits that can make a huge difference to someone's day.
So I think we need that message amplified a little bit. So I'll try to help. Hopefully this episode we'll go a little bit further than my previous episodes. And also, you know, thank you for all the work what you do, because essentially you're doing a very good and a very important job. And I hope you can continue this.
Thank you. So I'll let you know how they go, and I might put them at the forefront. Their accessibilities, maybe I'll film it as I go in.
Brilliant. And put it on LinkedIn.
Yeah,
listen to your husband.
Yes.
Listen to your husband. But anyway, Emma, thank you very much. And guys, thank you very much for watching. If you're still with us, please press the little subscribe button down there, and the like button, the share button, every button what you can press it. And we'll talk about other things later. Cheers.
Bye.